Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim still out due to the fact that Fairfax County Public Schools and every school district in the Washington, D.C. area is out of commission today. There was a, well, legitimate for the region snowfall yesterday, which pretty much guaranteed that schools would be closed indefinitely. Ian, it's great to have you back.
Happy to be here.
Ian's based in New York, so he can tough this out. Let's get to the good martini today, and it's a poll courtesy of Fox News. They commissioned it. They didn't actually do it. They had a conservative and a liberal polling firms combined to do this, and specifically the numbers we're going to look at relate to the big story from earlier in this week, and that's the Netanyahu visit to address a joint session of Congress. By a margin of 56 to 27, the American people think that inviting Netanyahu to speak before Congress was a good thing. They also believe that the Obama administration has not been aggressive enough in confronting Iran, 57% compared to 7% for too aggressive and 27% for about right. 59% of Americans believe that President Obama is a bad negotiator. 34% think he's a good negotiator. The American people, by huge margins, do not think it's okay for Iran to get a nuke. And they're actually a majority who think that military action, about 65% actually, if necessary, should be used to stop Iran from getting the bomb. So, Ian, it looks like the histrionics from the left in the wake of Netanyahu's speech on Tuesday did not mesh too well with the way the country as a whole is looking at this.
The administration and the Democrats seem to have instigated a large part of that, because Netanyahu's speech could have been just another sort of head of state speech, but it was the administration's own pettiness in response to the invitation and in response to Netanyahu through the years that helped to make that such an occasion. What that meant is that a lot of people were tuning in. It just got a huge amount of attention, and Netanyahu made a very powerful case that we need to be taking this extremely seriously. He looked the way a leader facing down an existential crisis looks. And Obama has never appeared that way. One of the things that perhaps Americans are coming around to and is certainly well known on the right is that Obama has broken with 30 plus years of American diplomatic strategy when it comes to Iran. The idea was always sanctions, always trying to put Iran under the gun, under our thumb, and reduce their influence. And Obama has taken just the opposite tack. So he's really in a position where he needs to justify that can be done, which is part of the reason that this administration is so desperate for this deal to work. Iran has come out and said that the deal is not good enough for them. They're in effect, they're the ones wielding the big stick at this negotiation, because the administration has put itself in a submissive, deferential position. Of course, Americans are catching on to that.
Some folks might be looking at this and saying, wow, the American people really paying attention to this issue. Not entirely. They had approval ratings for President Obama. They also had favorable, unfavorable for Benjamin Netanyahu. I think he's slightly above water, a plurality like Benjamin Netanyahu. 24% of Americans say they've never heard of him.
Well, sure. I was always amazed watching, you know, Jay Leno's jaywalking and finding out the number of people who don't know who the vice president of our own country is. There are just a whole lot of people for whom anything outside American borders is truly behind a veil of total ignorance. But to the extent that people are paying attention, when you look abroad right now, it's just very, very difficult not to think that things are going very badly, even if just from a sort of basic gut response. ISIS, Russia, North Korea. And now if you dig into it even slightly, you realize that fall of the government in Yemen is extremely problematic when it comes to these Iranian negotiations. I would say that barring or sort of bracketing the question of gross public ignorance on questions of foreign policy, anybody who's at least even a little tuned into the headlines has this sort of gut response that this is troubling stuff abroad, and you scratch a little bit below the surface when it comes to Iran, and the problems of these negotiations fit right into that larger picture.
All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And Ian, we were talking about yesterday how it's kind of fun to watch the Democrats not really rallying to Hillary's defense, because it's kind of hard to rally to her defense over the fact that she deliberately installed her own email server and own email system throughout the entire time she was Secretary of State. And now that speculation has gone on even further. Politico even had a column suggesting, what are Democrats going to do if she decides not even to run? They basically cleared the field for her. They'd be totally scrambling. Others have said, no, this is good. Other people in the race, that'll sharpen her up for a general election if she's still the nominee and so forth. So all that kind of spins out there. Obviously, down deep, some people on both sides of the aisle have secretly hoped that this scandal, as well as the fundraising scandal, and who knows what else could happen before she even actually officially gets in this race, could force her out. Folks over at hotair.com, specifically Noah Rothman and Jazz Shaw, have pointed out that's very unlikely to happen for a number of reasons. First of all, the Clintons have shown over and over again that they do believe they're above the law. And secondly, they've had no shortage of scandals over the years. They've thrived on those scandals. Maddeningly, to conservatives for the most part, they generally come out of them looking better than when they started.
That's right. I was thinking about our conversation yesterday. We were talking about the lack of a response besides Hillary's risible tweet. In fact, that is par for the course when it comes to the Clintons. You know, they have the machine that can go up and go into gear. You have the surrogates who come out. Not only do you have sort of the independent operators who come out and beclown themselves like David Brock and such, but you have slightly more distinguished types, Jennifer Granholm and others, who are a little closer and probably, you know, get trotted out by the Clinton operation to defend them. So it makes sense that the Clintons themselves don't say anything. This is the response that they have learned to cultivate and hone after nearly 30 years at the fore of American politics. They know that they can be silent and sort of let this culture that they've cultivated take effect. And Hillary has just a knack for surviving. Whitewater, Rose Law Firm, Cattle Futures, you can name them. The machine has worked. And so this is certainly bad, but thinking through it, it all sort of fits into the long-term strategy. And as you point out, the Democrats have put all their eggs in this basket, that all the stops will be pulled out, I think, to make sure she does get through this. And what you're seeing sort of behind the scenes, I was talking to some people yesterday, is a reasonable expectation that she will. And for those who stand by her in this period, they're going to reap the benefit in the future. The whole situation lends itself to thinking, not only will Hillary get out of this, but those who stuck by her will be an even tighter circle. They talk about broken bones growing back stronger. It might just be the case here.
On to the crazy martini now. And I guess the good news heading into this crazy martini is that these people don't want Hillary Clinton on the 20th.
Yet.
But they do say it's time for Andrew Jackson to go. The hero of the Battle of New Orleans, the 7th president of the United States, first frontier president, has got to go because, for two reasons, as it turns out, according to this group called Women on the 20s. Number one, he was the president during the Trail of Tears. And number two, he was no friend of the national banks. And so it's weird that he's on federal currency. So they've decided that there needs to be a woman on there because there is no woman on paper currency. They've got a list of a number of people, some of them very admirable women throughout American history, others just liberal icons like Rachel Carson, Margaret Sanger. If you're going to go after Jackson for killing people, I think Margaret Sanger needs to be X'd off the list pretty quickly. Then there's others on the list like Rosa Parks, obviously, Harriet Tubman, Susan B. Anthony, who used to be on money, on the coin, of course, Eleanor Roosevelt, another on the left. But what do you make of this, Ian? Is this time for this to happen, or is this just a way to get liberal indoctrination into our wallets?
Well, it's interesting that they have chosen Andrew Jackson, because really what the third unstated reason is he's male, right? And what they've done is go after the most vulnerable person on currency. It's not like they're going to be able to kick Abraham Lincoln off our money. So they find the most objectionable person and try to stick it to him. The reason that this is so frustrating, it's silly, it's probably not going to happen anytime soon. There are women on currency, not just Susan B. Anthony, formerly on the quarter, but Sacagawea is on the gold dollar. So this has happened before, but the reason it's so frustrating is because it's not an effort to put on our currency any particular woman. It's not like this group has said, you know, there's this fantastic woman who contributed, you know, a huge amount to American history and progress and prosperity. We should honor her by doing this, which would be an admirable impulse. And we could have that debate. I think that would be reasonable and fair. Instead, what they've said is there are too many men and we just need a woman. And so let's come up with this whole list of women and hopefully, you know, we can all find a mutually agreeable one. That is just an aggravating impulse. It's the same type of quota mentality that you saw at the Oscars in terms of race, that you see in all of these different movements, that really what it is just balancing out superficial characteristics. It has nothing to do with actually honoring someone worth honoring, but making an activist statement. And I don't think there's any reason countenance that effort.
You think this is going anywhere?
Oh, probably in time. The president naturally has said that, you know, he has received some letter from a young girl asking why there's no woman on any paper money. And, oh, that isn't that a good idea? And I would say if Hillary or Elizabeth Warren or some such is elected, it wouldn't be surprising to see that movement happen. But let's just say we have much more pressing things on the national agenda,
yes,
or should at least.
Certainly the case. Should, yeah, should being the operative word. Ian, we'll call time there. Have a great weekend, and thanks again for being with us.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim should be back on Monday. Please join us then for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.